Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. Due to social distancing and travel restrictions, Darren and I did something different for this month's episode and recorded a vidcast. You can view it on the Hardware Asylum YouTube channel or listen to it here in its entirety. The audio is a bit crunchy and mostly unedited. We hope you enjoy, and ultimately, let us know what you think.
All right, welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. We are doing something very different, as you can probably tell, since I am doing the introduction.
This is very different, actually.
We are, like most of the known world, in social isolation, social distancing extremes, which means that we've locked Dennis away somewhere deep in the Hardware Asylum Labs, as you can see on his screen.
I can't even touch Darren. He's not over here at all.
No. And I am coming to you, I guess, from the Hardware Asylum Annex, which is my at-home office, where I have been spending a great deal of my time in social work-from-home isolation. Yeah. But we didn't want that to stop us from coming to you guys this year with a podcast.
Yeah, and we thought we would do something a little bit different. It's not going to be edited like our normal podcasts, so this will be just a stream. It might be a little bit longer than a half hour. It might be shorter. I don't know.
A little video extra, if you will. So because we haven't had the opportunity to get together and do the things that we normally do to prep for our podcast, or even really the normal way that we do reviews, or the normal way we do really anything like everyone else out there, this will be fun and different.
I hope so.
That does mean that we are mostly talking about things that are going on in the hardware community and things that are going on while Dennis is sequestered at home working on his information. You may have noticed a surge of reviews as we've tried to keep ourselves busy as well, that hopefully will continue. But anyway, if you're sitting at home like we are, we hope that you will enjoy this conversation. And of course, like, subscribe, provide us with some feedback, because who knows, we may be doing this again next month.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll be a little bit smoother.
Well, that in mind, Dennis, I know you've been working on some projects, and I thought maybe this is a good opportunity to talk a little bit about those things. Mm-hmm. And I know most recently we talked about some video card overclocking that you've been working on, and quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, so at CES, I'm going to switch the views here. At CES, EVGA announced the RTX 2060 KO, and this was a low-cost version of the RTX 2060. I mean, they were selling it for $250, but it's also a very small form factor. And since we have video, I keep forgetting this. I should get the card. One sec. It's just a reach away.
Woohoo. Hey, you know, I was reminded as you were taking headphones on and off that we should tell people a little about our makeshift setup here before we dive into talking about the 2060.
Oh, of course. So I guess I'll start. To this side of me, I have the podcast machine, and we're running OBS to do the video capture. We're doing a Skype call. I still have my Pioneer headphones that I use for podcasting, and these are the ones that follow me from my office out to Building 2, which is where we do the podcast recording. For video, I'm using a Logitech Brio 4K camera sitting on a little tiny tripod, and I'm using that as the microphone as well. So if my voice sounds different, that's why.
Well, I think it sounds pretty good, although I think regular listeners will notice a little bit of a difference over our normal Rode setup. Mm-hmm. So I'm in the Annex, as I mentioned already, and I am coming to you live via a little bit older Logitech camera. It's a 920 Pro HD edition.
That's the workhorse of the Logitech cameras, by the way.
One of the most popular cameras out there, especially for, entry-level webcasters, broadcasters, that kind of thing, and a fantastic chat device. Surprisingly, they've gotten cheap because they've been around for a while. Mm-hmm. And I am having a hard time choosing between the headsets, so I am going today with my Sennheiser. So these are my PC gaming headphones.
Oh, yeah. We get
they're
to see your hands.
3Ds? Oh, well, worth a try.
Yeah.
They've been upgraded with some lambskin and velour ear pads. and hopefully they sound great. I'm surrounded by headphones, which we talk about a lot. This might be kind of fun. So I've got the wireless Sennheiser G670s that we reviewed not too long ago handy. Mm-hmm. I've got a entry-level pair of HyperX gaming headphones here that I sometimes use on my phone. These are my daughter's pair. And then I have my HD560 planers. So when we talk about all these headphones, now you get just a glimpse of a handful of them that I keep on my desk, and you wonder why I have a problem. But anyway, that's my equipment here at the office at home.
Well, I won't show you this stack of motherboards and video cards that I have right over there that I grabbed this guy from.
All right. So that's the...
This is the... Yeah, the EVGA RTX 2060 KO, or knockout.
Spoilers, you did not overclock it in that particular format, but you should tell us a little bit about that cooler, because that's pretty impressive for a small form factor.
Oh, well, this is just EVGA standard dual fan cooler. It's a 4 heat pipe solution with the radiator fins across the top, you know, some on the bottom. It's just a pretty standard cooler. The intent of this card, though, is to be small. Take, for instance, this card, which is set up for LN2 overclocking, and compare it against the RTX 2060, and you can clearly see the size difference.
Pretty small, but it does look like it's still full height, at least.
It is. And by the way, that card was the Zotac 2070 Ti Amp Extreme.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, right now we have the webpage up. So, I got this card shortly after CES, and I was not able to review it right away. And a lot of other reviewers had their review, you know, their articles posted on it. And I thought, well, everybody knows how fast an RTX 2060 is, and the KO is no different than that. The only difference is, you know, we still have the backplate, we got the dual fan cooler. It's a lot smaller. And it's not necessarily designed as a performance solution. It's designed as an economical one. The GPU in here is actually the silicon based off of the 2080 and the 2070. What NVIDIA did, though, is that they have some of them that don't make it. They have manufacturing problems, so to speak. So
to the miners.
So what they did is they basically fused off the... SMX units to make it an RTX 2060 and then resold it. But it is the same silicon that was intended for a 2070. The
One thing I noticed about it is that it has way less plugs on it than some of the higher end video cards, and you didn't show that. It's in the review, of course, and we'll link to that in the notes. But one DisplayPort, one DVI, one HDMI is way less than I would expect, especially given the dual slot size of that thing. But I guess that's part of keeping the cost down.
Right. It also does not have the USB-C for VR, like a lot of RTX cards. But again, it was designed as a low-cost solution. It's a small board. It has a 100% power limit, which we can talk about that when we get to the article that I wrote. But it also has, no VR support. It's based off of a chip that's been recycled. So it's really the most economical way that people can get into RTX gaming. And it's really capable. I was able to play just about anything on that while I was testing it beforehand.
Well, I know when I was at CES, they were positioning the 2060s as a direct replacement for the 1070 Ti's. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's exactly true, but it's pretty close. You do get RTX, ray tracing, and all the new technologies that, of course, the 10X series does not have, at least at the moment, although that is changing even as we speak with drivers.
Yeah, and I would say that performance-wise, it is a good 1070 in terms of the frame weight and performance. You know, I was playing, I forgot the name of it now, but it's the game that comes with it where you get to go, Deliver Us the Moon. That's the name of it.
Deliver Us the Moon.
Yeah, it's a very simple game. It's basically on rails. You get to go and you solve a puzzle, you go to the next stage, you solve a puzzle, you go to the next stage. But it has a lot of RTX enabled features in it. So you got to sample what RTX can do and play a game at the same time.
That sounds impressive. Now, as we mentioned before, when you did the overclocking on this, though, you decided to go a bit extreme.
A bit extreme, yes. So right now I have the article up. It's to that side of me.
Woo-hoo.
And basically, you know, it starts out with an introduction talking about the power plugs and the stuff that we just talked about here. The base clock is 1680 with a memory clock of 14,000, 1920 CUDA cores, PCI Express 3, blah, blah, blah. Everything that we know about the RTX 2060.
Right.
And then we break the card down. Obviously, I like to take things apart just to see how they work. The back plate here actually has thermal pads in it, so it's pulling heat off of the PCB. It has thermal pads to pull heat off of the memory directly to the cooler. The cooler is making direct contact with the GPU. The one thing I did notice is that there is no contact between the VRM and the backplate or the cooler. So the VRM is sitting there just kind of cooking itself away. It's a nice...
Interesting design choice there.
Yeah, well, it's a nice small four-phase VRM. And the idea is that since you're not overclocking, you're not going to be stressing it. It's going to deliver the right amount of power. And it's probably staying within spec. However, later on when I was overclocking this thing, that was the one item that was always hot. Go figure, right?
That makes sense because you're putting a lot of load on that when you try to overclock.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I took the card apart, we got to do our Sub-Zero prep. Now, I showed you the 1070 Ti here. It has the evaporator on it. It's got some insulation on the back. And something that you may or may not be able to see is right along here. I painted it with liquid electrical tape. And the idea...
We talked about that before.
Yeah. The idea with liquid electrical tape is that you create a watertight seal, just like what electrical tape would do for an electrical circuit. And it's just like putting Vaseline on the card, except that I can peel it off if you put it on thick enough. Because it basically just makes a, for the lack of another term, a skin-tight leather seal on the silicone.
Now, we've talked a lot about this in the past, but just bear with me a little bit. I know that you just talked about Vaseline, and we've talked quite a bit about kneaded eraser, and then this would be the liquid electrical tape. Is there a pros and cons there, why you chose that for the video card?
With the video card, there is a, a size limitation. So, well, a good example here. The 1070 Ti, you see how thin that is with the evaporator on it? Well, if you turn that around, here is the I.O. panel. If you want to have these cards sitting side by side, you can't have your evaporator or anything front or back beyond that point. Right. Otherwise, you cannot have a second card right next to it. At least that's the intent. Now, a lot of people just do one card, and that's why you have some of the fat pots that are yay wide, but you only have one card in there. So that's it. The size doesn't matter. But the point that does matter is right here across the top where the evaporator and the card meet. Now, if I put kneaded eraser on there to protect from condensation, I wouldn't be able to get this evaporator on there at all. It wouldn't fit. Now, the Vaseline is a quick and dirty method that works really well in high humidity areas because oil and water don't mix. Around here, it's pretty dry. And while you can use liquid electrical tape in Taiwan and whatnot, you can use it here, you can use it there. The idea with liquid electrical tape is that I don't have to deal with dirt.
Okay.
So it takes a little bit longer for it to prep. It takes about a day for it to cure to the point where I can actually put something on it. And then when I'm done, I can peel off the rubber, so to speak. Whereas if I was using Vaseline, then you would have to go through the dishwasher, and I don't really want to do that.
Yeah, no good.
Yeah, but also the the pro overclockers that use Vaseline or petroleum jelly, they also have a stack of these things, and they're just quickly, I gotta get this prepped, I wanna see if that's any good. So they're doing a lot of that for binning, and when they're done, they set it aside and then they'll re-prep it, and then that's the card that they use for their overclocking runs. And when they're done, a lot of times they just go into the trash because they're either burned up or they need to go back to the manufacturer. You know, once you pull the cooler off and put something like that on there, you're not gonna be in RMA mode. But I like to be able to put the coolers back on and use it later. So with Vaseline, you wouldn't be able to do that.
Well, I'm looking at the pictures here in the review, mm-hmm. and it definitely does not look like the same pot that you just showed us on that full-size video card there. So maybe we should talk a little bit about that.
Okay, so on the we're on page 3 of the review right now, which everybody that's watching this video can see that. At the very top, above the GPU, we have the power socket off to the right. And you see that there's 3 bumps and a square there?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so that is a power phase. So there is a memory power phase or a power, some sort of a power phase there. There's 3 capacitors and a choke at the very top of the GPU. Now that area is where this container be. It's like right here. And so I would not be able to put this container on that card because it would not fit. And I started exploring putting a big copper shim in there. I started looking at other ways to try to mount the pot. It just wasn't going to work. So I used my GPU pot instead.
Ah, that's why it looks so big. Okay.
Yeah. So basically what I did here is I used a PCI Express ribbon that we normally use for vertical GPU mounting. I plugged that into the first PCI Express slot on the motherboard, wrapped it around, laid the card flat down on a piece of Armaflex foam, you know, the stuff that I use for nitrogen insulation, and then used the weight of the copper pot on top of the GPU and then some insulation around that, and basically used the weight of the copper to seal it against the chip.
I think this is a great don't try that at home moment, which just goes to show how much work we sometimes go through just to get these things into the realm of liquid nitrogen cooling.
Yeah, and honestly, I got this idea from Honda City. He was one of the overclockers that would, he lived nearby, so he'd come by and we would spend a weekend overclocking. So I learned a lot from him. And he didn't have any of these GPU pots, so when he would overclock a video card, he did this exact same thing and just put a kingpin pot on top of it and then would sit there and overclock. And as long as you aren't moving the rig around, the copper is enough to hold enough pressure on there to actually make it work. So, but basically, I have a couple of pictures here showing how I set this up. I just used some old insulation that I had and cut it around the chokes and the capacitors at the very top, and then around the power plug. You can see a little notch there. And then use some Gelid thermal compound and basically put the pot down really carefully and then kind of wiggled it around to move it, you know, to get the paste evenly distributed. Gave it a little twist and then heated everything up to about 30°C, 35°C. And all you do for that is, you know, run a couple of benchmarks and you watch the temperature on the probe until the container gets up to 35. At that point, the paste becomes more fluid and will actually even out a little bit better. Give it another twist and you're good to go.
Sounds good. Okay, so I think we've got the prep under control. You talked a little bit about power here, and I think you talked about this quite a bit in the review, but maybe we'll come back to that when we talk about some other cards in power.
Yeah.
So for now, let's talk about how well it overclocked, or your results at least.
Well, it didn't overclock very well at all. And the reason being, remember earlier I talked about how the power target was at 100% on this card?
Right.
Well, that's the slider that you run in NVIDIA Precision. So at the very top, some cards that are designed for gaming will give you like 110% or 120%. This Zotac card will go to 140%. And what that is that is basically the power limit. So there's power coming into the card, it's being detected by the circuitry there, and it's only allowing a certain percentage to actually make it to the card. That is what determines the boost level. So when you are running a card that is cool, you know, if you keep a card cool, it will run faster than the advertised speed due to NVIDIA boost. That's okay, where you can have a 1680 megahertz card like what we have here, but it will run 1980 if you keep it cool. And it will run 2020 if you put liquid nitrogen on it because it makes the chip a little bit more power efficient. But we also are running into the performance cap where it's like, well, you're nearing what the overcurrent protection is going to be, or we're going to be shutting this card down. Basically, I got an extra 128 megahertz out of it or something like that. It wasn't really a lot to write home about. But it was quite fun to explore how fast this card would go and how much better the benchmarks could be. I have a screenshot here from the Precision X1 where I have the core set to 2280 and the memory would go all the way to 8,000 with help of some liquid nitrogen. But that didn't really equate to much in terms of extra performance in benchmarks, but it did kind of level out the peaks and the valleys and give me a slightly better score.
Interesting. Okay, well, I know that EVGA has a line here, so where does the 2060 KO sit in the line?
The KO is at the bottom, actually. It's at the very, very bottom.
So this is an entry-level gaming card, I would say, is a safe way to describe it.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned before, this is a budget-minded card, you know, from a reclaimed GPU. When they were on sale, they were $250. I think they're $300 now. And there's two versions. There's the KO regular, like what this one is, and then the KO Ultra, which gives you an extra 20 megahertz or something like that. It's not a lot to write home about, and if you're in the market for this particular card, I wouldn't bother going for the Ultra, because if you could, get like the XD Black or whatever it is, the next level up.
Okay, that makes sense. So overall, not the great overclocker, but not, I'm sure, a huge surprise being an entry-level 2060 card. No, so what's your opinion on this thing at the end of the day?
It is a great card for anybody who's wanting to get into RTX gaming. It is, if you're on a budget and you want to have the latest card, or the latest technology, I should say, the 2060 KO is a good one to look at. There's other manufacturers that have similar cards, so find which one you like and, you know, color patterns or something and go for it.
There you go. Well, and of course, pay attention to what type of cooler you're getting, because in the entry-level cards, you can frequently get a really good aftermarket cooler like the Frozone or something for not a lot more money as well.
No.
So something to pay attention to when you're shopping your cards.
Yeah. And speaking of cooling, the cooler on here does an extremely good job for the power target that it is given. One reason that this is only limited to 100% is because, one, the input power, and two, the amount of heat that this cooler can dissipate. So even if you could put a better cooler on this particular card, it's not going to make it go any faster.
Excellent. All right. Well, RTX 2060 KO, overclocking experiment with liquid nitrogen, in the books.
Yes.
Well, I think you should talk to us about what else you've got handy in the lab there today.
All right. So, being stuck in the lab and doing a little bit of LN2 overclocking, mostly just for fun, got me thinking that there is another level to LN2 overclocking, and that's the one where you pull all the punches.
Okay.
And you do something like this.
Well, that's an impressive looking board, but I don't know what it is. Oh, I see EVGA on it.
Yeah, so this is the EVGA E-Power 5.
Oh.
Now, the history of the E-Power goes all the way back to the days of when Shimino was with EVGA, and even before that, where he would take high-end video cards that maybe the chip burned up or something like that, And then he would cut the VRM off. Joke. And then
completely,
you know, just basically zip off of here and then rewire that VRM into another card to remove like an overcurrent protection or an ultra voltage protection, or to replace 4 power phases with 10 power phases.
Wow.
All in the name of removing any sort of a limit like what was on this card and be able to push the chip and the memory as fast as possible.
That all sounds pretty good.
Yeah, so this guy right here is the 5th version of the E-Power. One of the first versions was based off of the VRM that was on the X58, you know, in the Halem days.
Oh, wow, okay.
So that was the same VRM design that they put on the video cards, but they put it on a power board. And then this power board, the overclockers would get a hold of this and modify a video card, put this on there, and basically have unlimited power to run your GPU.
Unlimited power sounds exciting. So how does it work?
Well, it's pretty simple, so to speak. So you see all these copper pads on here, right?
Yes.
Okay, so some of them have a minus sign, some of them have a positive sign, and some of them are completely separate in pluses and whatnot. So what we have here is power rails. So this wide guy right here is a GPU or a V-Core power rail, and it runs off of 10 of these power phases. This one up here is a VDIMM power rail, and it runs off of these 2 phases up at the top here. So what you do is, and I think we talked about this on a podcast, but I don't remember which one. But right here, this is a pretty old, it's a 8800 GTX. And it's got a 4-phase VRM here. And what you do is you remove these chokes, and then you expose the power rail underneath it. So on this side of it here is 1.6 volts or whatever that goes and powers the GPU. What you're doing is you're taking the power board and replacing that. So where that power would normally be, you're taking it from this guy to give it to this guy instead of from here.
Okay, so I think I have just horrified myself by catching on. You still have to cut the board in half. Or...
Well, you don't necessarily have to cut this board. And there's good reason not to. For instance, there, I believe on this particular card, there's only one power circuit. These 4 feed this chip. So it's pretty safe to cut this one off, I believe. But on some of them where there is a power circuit for the PCI Express, there's a power circuit for the memory, and there's a power circuit for the GPU, if you cut the VRM off, you somehow have to apply power from this to power all 3 of those circuits on the card. And then...
But I'm still wondering how you're doing it to power one channel.
Oh, well, that's, you're just replacing the power. So you have these chokes right here are basically the end of the power circuit after the MOSFET that goes directly to the chip.
So you're using jumpers? Is that what you're doing? Soldering some wires?
Yeah.
Now the light bulbs come on.
Yeah, so you see the holes right there, right? You can actually run wires through there and then solder them to the board, because on the backside is more solder pads. Mm-hmm. Some of the more successful implementations of this are using thick copper strips. So they solder a whole strip along here, and then they solder that strip to the card at these points. And if you remove this solder mask, you know, this green stuff, it reveals the copper underneath. So you can make that pad a little bit wider. And the idea is that with the better the power connection, the cleaner the power will be, less voltage droop, you know, better overclocking experience.
I get that. Okay. So a very interesting toy. So I have to ask, what are you planning on doing with that crazy toy?
Well, I've actually never used this particular toy before. I've seen it used. I know the theory behind how it's used. The intent is to put it on this card and overclock it just to see if it works, for one.
Oh, I see. Some video cards were sacrificed to learn how to use the EVGA tool.
Right. Now, In the past, a lot of overclockers used boards similar to this to overclock 260s and 280s and 285s. That was a really popular mod back then. Some people were doing the 8800s as well. I even saw a post where they took one of the 8800 Ultras and soldered it onto an 8600 GTS, which didn't make much sense to me, but they were taking one video card to sacrifice to power another one, which was kind of fun. This particular board, though, would power this particular card. I don't think that that is going to be my end goal, but it is definitely something that I could do to take the RTX 2060 KO Overclocking Championship or whatever. It's not necessarily a very viable. Not a very viable solution, especially considering that EVGA has versions of this card that have a much higher power target built into the BIOS. So you could just get one of those cards and do the same thing. But I've always wanted one of these things, and they were on sale partially due to the current economic situation. But also, these have been on the market for a year, and I guess they didn't sell out of them, so, you know, put them on sale.
Excellent. All right, well, we've talked a lot about video cards, and I guess ePower 5 as a video card mod. Mm-hmm. I know that's not the only thing that you've been working on in the lab, because just recently you shared some pictures with me about, I think, some water cooling adventures.
Yeah, so at CES this year and the year before, I got to talk with the guys over at Mod My Mods, and they talked to me about a new product that they're going to have, their own product, because normally Mod My Mods is just a store. You know, you go there and you can buy water cooling gear, cases. They have a CNC or a laser machine or something like that where you can send in case panels and they will cut designs out for you, which is kind of fun. But they are releasing their own line of coolant that they call Mod Water. Now, I didn't set this up beforehand. I want to try to share these pictures. So give me a second.
Okay.
Oh, not that one. All right, so podcast 3. This is where we're doing things on the fly, people.
Don't push the wrong button.
Haha. So I have the browser window here. I'm going to get rid of that window. Boom. And then I'm going to add this window right here.
It's like movie magic, only nothing's happened yet.
Nothing, not yet. Soon, though. Soon. Boom. All right. So now I can share pictures. Yay! All right, so the first picture, Darren has a copy of these, by the way.
I don't see the picture, though. Am I supposed to see the picture?
No, you're not supposed to see the picture.
Okay, good. All right. Well, then I'm still waiting. I was waiting for the movie magic.
Shared them with you beforehand, though.
All right. I'm looking at the pictures, and, of course, we will have these available either via the article or in the notes.
Article, hopefully.
So follow along at home while you are listening to us and watching us as live as we can be.
Yeah. So the question was, they sent me some coolant. They sent me two bottles of their clear, and they sent me two bottles of their UV red. And I said, hey, yeah, send me coolant. I'll figure out a way to do a review for you. So I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I thought about it, and then I thought some more. And it's like, well, how do you review coolant? So I came up with some different levels that you need to consider. One is color, right? So if you're going to buy pre-mixed coolant, you want to have good color rendering. Now, when Darren and I would set up the C1000 for our builds, we would get the clear and then we'd add dye so we could actually control the color. And we have a nice video of that on the Hardware Asylum YouTube channel. So we have color rendering. We also have protectant, or how well does it work? What kind of systems is it compatible with? Can it be used with mixed metals in your loop? You know, everybody says, oh my God, you can only use copper. Well, that's true if you have only a certain kind of coolant. For instance, the Thermaltake C1000 has a whole lot of glycol in it, which makes it compatible with mixed metals. It's the same chemical that goes in coolant for an automobile. And the automobile is the epitome of mixed metals. We have iron, we have aluminum, we have brass, we have plastic, we have everything in there. And also a very harsh condition between, negative 30 degrees and 240, 260, depending on how hot you want to run your car. A PC does not have the same conditions like that, but we need to protect the components for longevity purposes and leaks and stuff like that. And the last one was performance. And this would be like cooling performance, right? So I devised a rig that would allow me to test the cooling performance and also the color performance based off of just pictures and whatnot. And you can smell it as it's being put in. You can see, kind of tell what's inside it. So these pictures are the rig that I put together for testing the cooling performance. And the first,
talk us through it here.
Okay, so basically the loop is set up with an XSPC Protium 120 reservoir pump res combo. It's basically like a D5 pump. It's got the nice glass reservoir and a plastic tube in the middle, which I know from experience can be stained quite easily depending on what kind of coolant you're putting in there. Premature, basically. And I mounted that to a 280 AlphaCool radiator with two Thermaltake 140 millimeter fans.
Okay.
I hooked that entire loop into the phase. Now, we did a video where we made a drink machine, and that's on our YouTube channel. I might be able to link that down in the show notes. But that to chill that loop and overclock our processor, I had the cooling loop hooked into my phase machine. So I had a CPU block connected directly to the phase. The liquid was pumping through the loop and being chilled by the phase machine going through the CPU block. It's, call it a hyper-cooled radiator. It's very small. It's only like a big. So this next picture that we're looking at right now is the different temperatures in the loop. So the temperature at the top is the sensor of the fluid before it reaches the CPU. The one below it is the temperature before it goes into the reservoir. The top temperature here, T1 on the X-Tech, this is a more accurate one because this is off a K-type probe, and this is the coolant temperature inside the reservoir. And then the one below it is T2, that is the phase head temperature. So the picture that you're seeing here is basically when the loop was already chilled to 4 degrees, I pulled the plug on the phase and it started to warm up as the coolant was being circulated through the loop. It was still at 5 degrees centigrade though.
Yeah, not much difference really between the two.
Nope. This next picture here shows the entire loop. So we have the temperatures off to the right. Here's the, over in the upper right is the block in the phase head. And if you can just follow the lines here, the water comes down, goes into the CPU. The CPU I'm using is a 3960X Threadripper. I had to think about that for a second.
Ooh, Threadripper.
Yeah, might as well use some of this Threadripper, and it is a super hot processor, so, you know, might as well, right?
Yeah, now I want to stop you for a second, because in the background, those three containers that look like auto oil containers, that is the Mod My Mod water containers.
Yep.
And I'm not sure that that's immediately obvious if you don't know what you're looking at there.
That is a very good point to bring up. Yes, in the background are the containers that the Mod My Mod's Mod Water comes in.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah. I praised them about this at CES. The containers are perfect because, you know, anyone that's ever worked on a car is going to recognize this as an oil container. People that have not worked on a car probably should pick up a wrench and learn how to work on a car.
But it does give you great control over your pores.
It does.
Which is why that design is so popular for automotive. Mm-hmm. And very durable. They don't take up a lot of space. I'm kind of impressed. There's a reason why that is an industry standard.
Yes. The one thing that it does not give you a chance to do is see the color of the fluid before opening. So that is probably one of the drawbacks from it. But as we'll see later, the color rendering is quite good.
Okay.
In the picture, in the picture, you can see that I'm using the RTX 2060 KO that was pictured here. Even after it was overclocked and abused, it still works great, so I'm using it on the bench.
But it is not water-cooled.
It is not water-cooled, it's air-cooled.
Okay.
But the T-blocks right here and right here, those are where the temperature sensors are. And if you follow the probe here into the res, that is the res temperature. Later on, I decided not to use the res temperature as a measurement point because it was inaccurate, believe it or not.
Okay.
Here is a picture of I drained the fluid. So this is later on, actually. This is the C1000 coolant. I drained it because I tested that, and then I went to the Mod My Watts fluid. And as you can see, it didn't stain anything. There's no extra residual color.
Nice.
And here is the Mod My Mods UV red, a red UV. Slightly pink, don't you think?
I do think it's slightly pink, but all UV seems to wash out into sort of that neon color scheme. That's just kind of the way it's been for years, and now you're...
Here, I pulled out the a UV cold cathode.
That's kind of what I was going. I was looking for what was the light source here. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And this is what it looks like under UV. It basically becomes somewhat opaque. And it depends on, on the right, we have a flexible tube. In the center, we have a glass cylinder. And on the left, we have a, I forgot the name of it. Yeah, we have a hard line, which is PTG. I forgot what it's called. Anyhow, yeah, we have a hard line here. It's not glass, though. It's plastic. And it's not acrylic. Yeah, it's
not acrylic. Okay.
PETG, that's what it is. And if you notice down here at the bottom on this picture, it's black, right?
Yeah.
And in this picture, it's a bit discolored. That is because this particular fitting was one that we used with the C1000 opaque back in the day and had a bit of a leak.
Oh, so that's what's got that almost, yellow color to it here.
Yeah, so it turns out that the C1000 coolant, the opaque, is UV reactive. Basically, it's the white particles in there that make it opaque. It's reacting to the UV light.
Now we know.
I thought that was, that's not a crime scene thing. There wasn't any sort of fluids being transmitted there. It's just coolant.
I'll zoom in close and see if you can find fingerprints, right?
Yep. Here's another shot of the UV container. And here's what it looks like once the red UV has been drained from the loop. And as you can see, there's no residual color, no staining. It's a very non-staining fluid. And that makes me very happy.
Well, it looks really attractive, especially under UV. I feel like it's about time for UV to make a comeback. But right now, programmable RGB seems to be the rage. So we'll see if UV builds come back around. Everything old is new again.
Yes. Now, in terms of performance, we can wait until the article comes out. But I can tell you that the Mod Water does contain a slight amount of glycol. So it's not a straight water with some dye in it like our PrimaChill fluid that we were going to use in your build. But it doesn't have as much glycol in it as, say, the C1000 from Thermaltake. And that is an important point to make because when you order this fluid, you can tell them, I have mixed metal in my loop. I need to have more glycol. And they will mix their Mod Water, because they mix it there, with a little bit more of the protectant before they ship it out to you.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah. So it's not as easy as just going down to the store and picking it up and buying it. I mean, you can go to modmymods.com and pick it up from there. But if you have a special situation, you can talk to them and they will accommodate.
Well, I think especially given the current economic state, if you are in the market, this is certainly a great company to help support. as we go through these tough times for smaller companies. The Mod by Mod guys, really great guys, and we appreciate their support. And again, I think some pretty cool stuff going on there. And I can't believe that you can just order it custom. That's just the icing on the cake.
Yeah, definitely. So that's our show. We don't really have an intro or an outro. That was one thing that I forgot to do, so maybe we'll add them afterwards. But let us know what you thought.
Woohoo. Well, hopefully you enjoyed this, and with a little luck, we'll be back shortly with a second episode or an extra. So from the Hardware Asylum outbuildings and deep in the lair of the Hardware Asylum bunker, if you will.
Yeah, the labs.
Yes.
The Ninja Lane
Labs. We hope you check us out and enjoyed this podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes at hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2020. Thanks for listening.